now time for the Port Podcast.
Two, one, we are rolling. Welcome back, everybody, to a new episode of the Port Podcast. I'm pretty excited to have Gary on the show today. This has been a long time waiting. Gary, thank you so much for joining us on the Port Podcast today. Craig and I are so excited to have you. We've been talking about this episode a little bit, I'd say from episode one to now, because part of your job as a marine pilot, Gary, is a tremendous feat to what we're doing here at the port. And it's a big component of how things work logistically. And I think having your knowledge and expertise in the industry on this episode is going to be really, really interesting, both to potential workforce people that are maybe looking to becoming marine pilots, and as well as a little bit about the reality on the water. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. We're so excited to have Gary Joyce here from the St. John Marine Pilots, the Atlantic Pilot Authority. So we're very, very excited. Thank you all for listening to the show. If you've listened to our past episodes, we really appreciate it. And if you're just tuning in for the very first time, thank you so much. We're excited to have you here. So, Gary, to start things off, tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got involved into this industry and the job that you're in.
Well, I grew up in a small fishing village just outside of Halifax and was around the water most of my life and realized that I did want to go back to the water when I had a job. So I started actually in Coast Guard. We have a small Coast Guard base that comes up here in the, well, there's one just here at the head of the harbor, but also in the summertime we have students that come and do inshore rescue up in the river itself. And that's how I started. And then I got into the Coast Guard a few years later and realized that after a number of years working there, I kind of wanted to get into the commercial world and see the world. And so that's what I did. I ended up working on a cable ship, so putting fiber optic cables pretty much in every continent of the world.
Wow.
And traveled with them for a number of years and became captain, and then realized I liked doing the project stuff. So then I ended up in Europe doing the wind farms out there, and did that for 5 years, and then decided it was time to come home. So ended up working actually in the office of the APA for a little while, and then realized that it was time to go back to sea again, so I'm here now. For 3 years. I've just finished my training at the beginning of this year. It takes a number of years to get your training and become a full-fledged pilot, but the training really began in 1999.
So. What has been a big part of your passion basically excelling in this industry? Because it seems like along the way, the professional development is really, really integral to what you're doing.
Certainly. I think it's really the drive to be on the ocean, part of the team, because that's what it is. You're on a ship, you're part of a team, and as you work your way up through the ranks, you like having a little bit more control. You like to be in charge of this, you like to be in charge of that, and then eventually making your own team. So that was what I got to do.
Interesting.
When I worked in the UK, was I built my own team, hired the ships, and went and finished the wind turbines. And it was, you know, that sort of personality is the type of person that becomes a pilot. You're not a person that is able to just sit and not take charge or not do things, because you have to. You literally have to come aboard a ship and take over from a captain who basically has been running the ship most of his career, and you have to take over nicely.
Keyword, yeah.
So for those of us in the St. John community, we're seeing ships with more frequency in the harbor, both the inner harbor and the outer harbor. But oftentimes, that you know, we get a lot of questions from a port standpoint. What are these vessels doing that are going out and helping bring the ship in? So maybe describe to us what a marine pilot does and what the Atlantic Pilotage Authority does for our region.
Okay. Well, I'll start with the Atlantic Pilotage Authority. Basically, their role is to manage the pilotage in Atlantic Canada. So there's four different authorities in Canada, and Atlantic Pilotage Authority is based in Halifax, but they manage Halifax, St. John, St. John's, you know, Canso, and there's 21 ports now. There was 17 before. So it's quite a busy region, and of course there's St. John is the busiest port by volume, and Halifax is by numbers. So as a pilot, we're here to protect not only the ship, but we're also protecting the port. So our knowledge is used to basically bring a ship in. We go out on everybody knows the yellow pilot boats. They all assume we just stay aboard them. But we climb up a rope ladder with all the technology in the world. You'd think
still
rope ladders would be a thing of the past. But we climb up a rope ladder and take over from the captain, and using our knowledge, and we bring the ships in safely. So most captains, for example, would not know that at low water specifically, it's not slack tide.
Right.
And we had a number of times actually over the cruise season where the cruise captains were like, well, we'll just come in at this time, it'll be slack. And well, that's not the slack time. That's going to be the hardest time to come in.
Right.
Yeah, those variables can change very much, especially in the Bay of Fundy.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, you know, if a ship gets damaged, it's quite costly, but if we were to, heaven forbid, take out a crane or damage a dock to the point where it's unusable, inexperience from captains coming in from Brazil or from anywhere else in the world wouldn't know the specifics of this harbor, and that's what our job is to do, is to bring those specifics on board and then do it safely.
I remember, I think it was about a year ago, I was watching The Secret Life of Crews on Discovery Channel, and I remember them talking about how integral it is working with the pilots, because they know everything that they are trained to know, but they actually know those areas, and they're there very much to ensure the safety and not of the people and of the vessel and of, like you said, the surrounding areas. And it really, I saw them, you know, docking these massive cruise ships in the dark in like the port of Miami, where there's just multiple ships, and it gives you a sense of, you know, what you do for a job. I think of like, you know, airplane pilots, pilots of boats, captains, bus drivers, people that are really responsible for a big feat that are also responsible for the safety of a lot of people. I have a profound respect for people like you in that industry, and especially working in different elements. Like the Bay of Fundy is extremely cold. It's a little bit volatile at times, especially in the winter. And, you know, you guys are making sure that people are feeling great when they're coming to port. So I really appreciate it, just from a sense of, I've had people that have worked on the water and have had, you know, some accidents and things. And it was the pilots that made sure that they came home safe afterwards, and that if processes or things had to change to ensure safety, it's usually the pilots that are seeing that firsthand. So thank you for that.
So what does a typical day look like for you and your colleagues?
Well, we work on a 2-week rotation, and there's 8 of us complete. So right now there's 4 of us that are working on shift, and we rotate through. So this morning I was the first guy up, so I got to take the tanker off the buoy on the monopoy, the Canaport. So now I'm at the bottom of the list, but there's 4 more jobs this afternoon. So the first job will go to the next guy, and then eventually I'll get called again for 5 o'clock, actually. So that's a typical day. Now, today it's almost banker's hours. Usually it's not. Usually we work with the tides. So if we had any motion on the high tide this morning, it would have been 5 o'clock instead of 9 when I did before.
So how do you schedule your day?
Yeah, that's what I was curious of.
You guys had a taste of it, actually.
Yeah.
We were originally scheduled for 2, and now we're scheduled for 11, but then I could be delayed. So it's not really much of a schedule. You get a 4-hour call out in the daytime and 2 hours at night. And we're in contact with all the stakeholders in the port a lot. Generally, we have a good idea when things are moving. So. It's just like everything else with shipping, things change.
Right. So maybe explain a little bit about, you know, when you get the call to go out, you know, right from embarking the vessel at Long Wharf Slip to getting out there.
Sure. So we'll get our call a couple hours before, especially in the nighttime, and then we'll get up, get a coffee.
Hopefully.
And then once we get out to the office, we'll sit in the office for a little bit and start planning. If there's multiple moves on, sometimes there's 5 or 6 moves and one tide. Mm-hmm. And where the tides are so large, and especially in Courtney Bay, the depth isn't very much. We need to work them all at the same time.
Right.
There's only so many tugs. So that's when we'll sit down, we'll make some plans with the other pilots that are in, figure out the tides, figure out when slack water is. And then once that's all done, we'll get to the ships. When we get aboard, we'll do a handover with the captain and basically learn all the idiosyncrasies that he knows about his ship, explain to him what we're going to be doing, talk to the line handlers, make sure everybody's ready to go, and put the tugs in position where we're going to use them. once we have clearance from traffic and there's no other traffic moving, we'll clear away from the dock. This is the simple part. It's going to sound easy. Yeah, we clear away from the dock, and then we go out there. Mm-hmm. So obviously with the tides here and the currents, it's quite different. With
right.
It.
Yeah.
If you have a 15-minute delay, everything can change on you very quickly. Right. So you have to pay attention to that as well. If there's another ship that's coming in that's tying up and it takes them a little bit longer, well, what you planned on doing before may have changed a completely different plan now. Right. So once we clear away from the dock, we leave the harbor. The pilot boat follows us out, unless he's out already. And basically, once we're out and clear, past Partridge Island, past the pilot station, we climb down the ladder again. And the ship's on its merry way, and we come back in on the pilot boat. That's if we're not doing another job, an arrival, let's say. So that's basically it in a nutshell.
It's fascinating.
It takes you 3 years to learn that.
Three. I bet there's a lot in between.
Yeah. And, you know, just to let you guys know, before the show, obviously, I always say a lot of the gold happens in the conversation before we hit record. But Gary and I, we were talking a little bit about workforce and about your sons joining the workforce and your love of being out in the water. And can you shed a little bit of light onto how folks who might be interested in this industry might be looking to, you know, get into it? And maybe give them a little bit of advice if they're looking to kind of navigate, pun intended, to kind of get into it.
Well, there's schools throughout the Maritimes. There's one, I went through the Coast Guard College, that was in Sydney.
Yeah.
That's a very good option because basically they'll pay for your schooling and then you have to give them a few years after you're done your schooling and you come out with a commercial ticket.
Finding work can sometimes be the hardest part, so it's kind of nice that they pair that.
The nice thing is right now the industry is struggling for people, for mariners that are professional mariners in Canada.
Right.
So it's a good time to try to get into this industry, actually. so you can go there. There's Holland College in PEI. There's also the Marine Institute in Newfoundland. Mm-hmm. I might be missing another one, but there's multiple ways. NSCC does it as well. And once you've done it's just basically an apprenticeship. So you start off with your third mate's ticket and you work your way up through to Master Mariner. And that could take you, if you're very quick and you get the sea time, it could take you 4 years. It doesn't usually take 4 years. It's usually a little bit longer.
Okay.
And then as a pilot, you need to have some experience as master before you can even apply. And you have to, here in St. John, the minimum certificate is a master near coastal, but most of us are master mariners.
Okay.
So in order to get that, experience, it's probably 15 years
yeah
you can even apply as a pilot.
Wow.
And I just think it's important to talk about the way that, you know, whether it be labor relations or the way that, you know, the growth at the port is happening, because I mean, Craig and I, we both went to St. John High, we looked at the port every day, and I think understanding what opportunities might be available and what work needs to be done to be part of a really good workforce. I think that's part of our duty to do on the show too, is to let people know how and what different ways and information to share to get into the workforce as well. And something else that I said on the show to Gary is that it takes a tremendous type of work ethic and person to be in this industry, because the level of focus, the level of consistent professional development that you have to do ongoingly to stay not relevant, but to understand the different variables, the circumstances of how things are changing on the water. I mean, you're dealing with people's lives and very expensive vessels and big ports, right? So what is a piece of advice that you might give to people based on all of your experience in the industry? I'm sure you've had a lot of different instances, right? Good and bad, but.
Yeah, I think it would probably apply to most places in life, though.
It's
just a matter of being responsible.
Yeah,
and having a good work ethic to forward yourself in your own career, and it applies to the marine industry as well as anywhere else, I'm sure.
So Kate's hit on this a couple of times, like health and safety, and obviously the responsibility that you guys have. Mm-hmm. What are some of the health and safety measures that you folks are constantly thinking about, especially in this dynamic environment?
Well, in the dynamic, obviously the most dangerous part of our job is getting from the pilot boat to the ship.
Right.
And I mentioned before, it's a rope ladder. We've actually, the pilots across the world, there's been incidences recently and throughout the years of pilots falling off the ladder. We just had a pilot fall off in Cape Breton and hurt himself quite badly. We're constantly aware of the dangers there. Some of the things that you would normally think of, because you're climbing up a long ladder, you think working at loft and working at height, but try to attach yourself to a rope that the guy's got up at the top of the ladder,
right,
and the ship's going up and down in the boat.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So it really is a timing thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we wear a lot more gear now than they did. I was actually looking at some of the pictures in the office, and they used to wear this. This was the outfit to go to the
boat
with a nice hat on. And so
you're just like Carabiner, like onto things, just like no problem, like ready for a board meeting afterwards.
That's right. So it's changed over the years. We now have coats that we're working on trying to find the right fit to move forward, especially into wintertime where we have a little bit more cold weather here. Our life jackets are very substantial. Mm-hmm. We also have AIS beacons so that if we go overboard, Fundy traffic knows where we're at. Everybody knows where we're at, so they can hopefully find us, hopefully not in the fog. As well as the deckhands that are on the boat, they're tethered in, so they can't fall overboard. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of bringing the speed down for the ship to get us alongside. Now, we can climb a maximum of 9 meters on the ladder. if it's any more than 9 meters, then they'll actually put the gangway down, so we'll have to climb up a little ways and then get back on the gangway.
Okay.
Once we get onto the ship, obviously we're concerned about snapbacks of lines. Like the tugs, they can pull 50 tons, 60 tons, 70 tons, depending on the tug you get. And if a line breaks, it's like a whip. And so everybody has to be standing clear and aware of those dangers as we're coming alongside. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with the ships and the line handlers. So if I'm coming alongside on a ship, you can imagine one of these container ships, they're not light.
Right.
You don't just put on your jig brake and...
Right.
It's park, So if you're moving slowly, it doesn't matter that you're moving slowly. There's a lot of momentum. So if they put a line out and they pull on that line, there's a lot of tension that comes up very quickly. So just to make sure that everybody's aware of those dangers.
So on that note, we have a lot of diversity in terms of the types of vessels and the cargoes that we handle. So liquid bulk, you mentioned you were out this morning at Cannaport. We've got bulk operations, primarily potash in Courtney Bay, then containers and crews. What's it like to be a pilot on the different types of vessels?
Well, the cruise ships are fun because it's like playing with something that has all the toys and all the bells.
Right.
So the cruise ship, I think of the Oasis of the Seas, I think she has 21,000 horsepower of bow thruster. So some of the container ships have 25,000 horsepower of main engine. So, with a 1,000 horsepower of bow thrusters.
That's a difference, for sure.
The cruise ships are actually easier to maneuver, but you're dealing with different personality types and many people on the bridge compared to what you deal with on the other ships.
So okay.
A cruise ship job is not necessarily as much the maneuvering. It's almost the personalities and how they interact with everybody on the bridge. The potash jobs are very basic, simple ships, and they're usually coming in very light, so we call them balloons.
Okay.
To blow around on the top of the surface of the water.
Really?
Oh, that's interesting.
When they leave, they're really heavy. And
really heavy, yeah.
They don't blow around, but they don't get moving very fast.
Right.
So, and then you add in the freshet and all these other things that happen. And it's fun to change gears between jobs.
Yeah.
And, if we get a VLCC on the buoy, those are some of the heaviest ships. Cruise ships are nice and big, and they look very heavy, but they're light as a feather with a lot of power compared to these bigger ships that are fully laden with 333,000 tons of...
Yeah.
They don't stop very well.
No.
Now, do pilots, do they count how many times they've boarded a ship, or is that something
My assignment number's on there, so I could...
But, you know deep down how many times you've... Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought, because I think it's really cool with the power of social media over the past few years. I've seen a ton of different videos where you see people that have to wait for the exact moment, and they're on the tug, and then they're jumping onto the boat, or the people on cruise ships that have to go deliver the mail on the pier, and then they have to run back, and sometimes they miss it. I think that's something common that a lot of us see, but I don't think... I mean, my grandfather worked at the dry dock, and his work was not showcased to me on a screen all the time or on YouTube. I had no idea what he did, probably until the last few years. And I have a big respect now for a lot of people that did work at the dry dock, that are still working at the port. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool to bring some of that to life. And I think getting more people to understand how to get into that workforce is important, because if we don't have those people, then we don't have that industry and we don't have that for the economy. And I know that's important for me living here in New Brunswick. And I think it's just so cool now with the power of video and social media to bring that to life. And I'm seeing more coming from the pilot. It's so cool to see that perspective.
I started that actually last year. So I run the pilot page. But
I think it's so cool.
On people to send me,
it's phenomenal.
Send me pictures. But people always just assumed you jumped on the yellow boat, you went out, and the ship followed you in, and Yeah. Didn't
but like, you know, seeing things. You, like you said, on those rotations and it being too, like really understanding what that looks like, it gives a lot more context to your day to day and that work. Cause otherwise we wouldn't have cruise ships coming in that wouldn't help local businesses, yep, you know, succeed. Sure. We wouldn't have had Container Village. So I think everything plays a really big part holistically. And if people know what people are responsible for, there's a better respect for it and a bigger respect to keep it and to nurture it too.
I think your social media page has been, you know, the biggest reason why we're getting a lot more questions about pilots. I think there's general curiosity. People want to be working in the marine industry in St. John more again. I think one of the other big changes is your move. It's not totally finished yet, but to Long Wharf Slip.
Yes.
Because a lot of people will walk Harbor Passage and watch the pilotage movements and ask about your vessels all the time. One question that I get from time to time is, What is the history of pilots? Why around the world do local mariners with all this knowledge of the harbor board ships to bring them in?
Well, you can imagine for the first people that came here. So Samuel de Champlain came in, I think it was 1604.
Gary was there waiting. Yeah. Hey, I'm ready.
No, but there were indigenous people that were able to tell them the risks of the reversing falls. All of these things still existed back then. And you can imagine sailing ships up. Mm-hmm. So they needed this local knowledge. So that, you know, that's an example from here. It's the same all over the world.
Right.
I've been in a lot of places in the world and there's pilots in pretty much every spot. And especially if there's any technical difficulties getting in. Now as a cable ship captain, we kind of got into the small little spots that didn't have pilots, and that was kind of fun myself to be able to maneuver that. And I remember going into the Azores and the pilot there was going, "This is the biggest ship that's ever come in here. So can you bring it in? And I'll just show you we're not the hit." I'm like, okay.
We'll do that. Wow.
So we had to go away from a hurricane. So,
okay.
But that's the history of it, is that without that knowledge, I can't imagine trying to navigate the reversing falls for the first time. Well, there'd be more stories of disaster, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
The other question I get all the time is too, the relationship between the tugs and the pilots. What's that type of relationship like?
Well, we have meetings one or two times a year to discuss, you know, past happenings and future happenings. Basically, we work together. We don't work for the same companies, obviously. Yeah. We work together to make sure the safety of the ship and safety of everybody on both ships, mm-hmm, to bring them alongside. And, you know, they're very professional, and they're there basically to save your bacon when you get into trouble, because if the wind comes up, or we've had times where the lines have parted and, you know, already on, he already knows what's going on, and he's coming out with another tug.
Yeah,
things have gone awry a little bit, and those are things that you don't think of. Well, you do think of, but you have them in the back of your head, because you can do this job quite often, and everything. Oh yeah, no, I did that 3 times last week. This is fine, but it's that one day you get too complacent, and that's when the tugs are a godsend.
Right,
and
right.
These are very maneuverable, and the captains are
That's so cool. I think it's nice hearing that people like working together. I know sometimes it can, whether there's politics or whatever going on, but I love when it's out on the water, it seems like everybody from an organizational standpoint, a team, whether it's out fishing or everybody's sharing information to keep each other safe, because we know the dangers of it. We know the variables of it. And I think it's just important to kind of just, if we're feeding our ecosystem quite literally and figuratively and helping each other, I think that's when we can have a healthy and safe waterfront and workforce as well. And I appreciate you like letting us know, and to people listening, how to, you know, from a permeable standpoint, like get into the industry, because it could seem maybe daunting, but these are things that I wish I had known maybe in high school, and it maybe would have changed the course of my life.
Sure.
Just knowing the trades and the needs of what my actual city needed versus maybe what I wanted to do. So I think it's really good for people to know those things. So thank you so much. Just as we wrap up, I'm just curious, what is one last piece of advice that you'd love to give people who might be considering being a pilot in this industry?
That's a tough one. A lot of people don't necessarily know they're going to become a pilot. I didn't expect to become a pilot. But I would basically just tell them to work towards their tickets, work towards their master mariners, gain their experience, and then take that experience with them. And it's an excellent job for life balance. After being away at sea for one year, I think it was 270 days.
Oh, wow.
Working 18-hour days. And
that's incredible. Wow.
All of a sudden now I'm home, and, you know, after this, I'm going to wrap up and I'm going to go stack a cord of wood and then I'm going to come back and do another job. But it's that life balance that people don't account for. And after years of doing other things, they realize they can do that as well. So to keep that goal in their mind.
And I've got one more quick one.
Yeah.
So for anyone listening that's not from this region, what's one thing you want to tell them about the dynamic Bay of Fundy? Good or bad?
The tides are not doing what you think.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate a little bit?
We'll just send that out to all the
just
captains.
Just send it out.
Coming
okay.
in, just as a disclaimer for all the cruise captains.
So that's whatever you think of the Bay of Fundy, it's a little different.
It's chill, guys. Just come see us. Yeah. We're fine. We've got great pilots. We'll get you in on time. We'll get you safe. It's good.
Great. That must be an interesting atmosphere, though, for the captain. They want that challenge.
Certainly. It's especially during freshet season.
Yeah.
It really becomes, right. You don't realize we've actually considered bringing our weeks on, two weeks off, down to a week on, week off, because while you're on shift, it is.
It's pretty demanding. Yeah.
It's very demanding because we kind of go through the seasons where it's nice and cold.
Yeah.
And then we get freshet, and then we get fog.
Right.
And then we get the cruise ships, and then it's starting to get cold again.
Right.
It's a.
So those are your seasons. That's fog, seasons.
That's
cruise
that's their life balance, right?
Okay, winter. There you go. There's the four seasons of a pilot.
There we go. Yeah. We like that.
I love it.
Gary, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Seriously, I really enjoyed that conversation. I hope that you all did too. And until next time, see ya.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening.